Join industry leaders for an exciting event unlike any other at Parker Seminars Las Vegas 2024. Attendees will hear from renowned speakers, including ultra-distance cycler David Goggins, leadership expert Simon Sinek, and an author of Battle for Your Brain, Nita Farahani, among others. We'll have 12 unique tracks to choose from, covering topics from beyond biohacking and chiropractic principles to clinical science and more. Go to parkerseminars.com and register today.
Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of Three Techies Banter. But you'll hear more about this later on the episode. Let's get right into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
So it's an interesting thing. This is the first time in the three seasons of Three Techies Banter that Samiran and I have decided to come into the studio to record. Nilesh, of course, joins us from Dublin on Riverside, but Samiran and I are here today and we thought we would check whether the energies change or not. So if I'm looking like an idiot where I'm turning to the right all the time while you see me on video and I'm having a conversation, it's simply because I have Samiran sitting on my right. And if he's looking towards the left, you know it's because I'm sitting over here. And so while they've recorded us individually, I promise you we're looking at each other and not staring into space or behaving like some idiots.
If you recall, we started season three with Roti, Kapra, and we kind of forgot about Makan. So here is Makan for you. And in case you have forgotten about Roti and Kapra, you can go back and listen to it. So I think as we kind of started thinking about this episode, we realized that, you know, Makan as in housing was a much larger problem than, you know, just you and me finding a house. You know, it is a national and international crisis, so much so that, in fact, the UN and the World Bank have, you know, dedicated a whole SDG to it, you know, Sustainable Development Goal number 11. It's about giving housing to all by 2030. I think that goal was set up in 2015. I don't think it's happening by 2030. But anyway, it's there. The fact is that with rapid urbanization, I think there's around 1.8 billion people who have living in substandard housing. So, you know, there's a tons of stuff that governments are trying to do to solve it. Builders are doing, people are trying to kind of figure out more and more innovative ways of solving this problem. But it is seriously an issue. And, you know, issue is really serious when people start making jokes about it. This is a problem globally, and it is obviously a problem nationally, which is why we've got a whole bunch of schemes, including the Prime Minister's Awas Yojana, which is kind of trying to address this problem of housing for all. I think half the population is living in slums. I think there are 4.4 persons per room at a urban level, at slums at an urban level. So it is a very large problem at the micro level. And at the micro level, we have this very funny paradox where there is a whole amount of houses which are available, but there is a huge shortage of available houses where people are looking for it. So big mystery there, which I think Sheetal is going to solve.
Of course, I'm going to wield my sword and sort all problems of the world, which is never going to happen. But what is interesting, I think, is the fact that if you look at it from a sustainability point of view, right, we all look at housing, we think of it as generations, things that we leave behind for our children, etc. The fact is that housing is one of the largest carbon emitters in the world, right? So there is this whole thing of the various countries coming together to say that they want to have a net zero carbon emission by 2070, right? But think about it. India is the fourth largest carbon emitter in the world. And construction sector consumes a lot of energy. So according to a UN status report, construction sector consumes about 36% of the final energy. And in Asian countries, India consumes 25%, right, of the total carbon emission due to construction. Now, yes, a large part of the construction is not necessarily residential, but it is very large. And so on one side, and Nilesh will talk more about the homelessness part of it, but on one side, with the population expanding and growing, we need homes because there are homeless people. On the other side, every time you create a home, you're creating problems for the future generations. And that's quite an interesting dichotomy. So, Nilesh, you want to step in and talk about the homelessness and the issue around homelessness?
Before Nilesh, actually, but you know, this is a very, I guess it's a problem because one of the offshoots of development or economic growth is this more construction, more building, more development, what have you, which unfortunately also has this pollution angle. So what we are essentially saying that you have to, going forward, develop consciously. Because, I mean, you can't go back and fix everything every time. Because you can't say, you can't do what China has done. That, you know, you develop, pollute, and now go and fix it. So basically, it has to be, to kind of repeat a really corny word, it has to be sustainable development, so to speak.
Correct.
So, Samiran, just to add to that, we have to develop sustainably, and I will talk about it in our second segment about solutions to this problem. But I read something interesting that, you know, 2/3 of global building area today, right, will still be around in 2040. So now if you set up goals for 2070, it means that you'll also have to retrofit. So we can touch upon a little bit that 2/3 of the stuff will still be lying around. So you can start building new in a better manner, but you will have to retrofit. Now, coming back to, you know, Samiran touched upon it a little bit about the homelessness part, right? To give some numbers, and it's not an accurate number. UN reports say that about 150 million people are homeless, which is about 2% of the world's population. And on the other hand, Sheetal talked about the whole emissions aspect of it. So this is like a big catch 22 situation, right? You have to build and you need you know, homes. And the reason why we have to solve homelessness was very aptly mentioned by a Cambridge anthropologist called Dr. Johannes Lenhard. He mentioned something which was very interesting. He said that there is a huge sense of well-being tied to simply having your own front door. And Cambridge University actually did research, and they found that when they provided, something they called modular mini homes to a lot of homeless people, there was a huge reduction in drug and alcohol abuse and improvement of physical and mental health. I think what we'll do is probably in the second section, we'll talk about some of those solutions, modular solutions. So you have to solve for homelessness, and then you have to ensure that your practices for future buildings are sustainable, and you have to retrofit the buildings that are not energy efficient but will be around, you know, 2/3 of them will be around for next, you know, 2 decades. So that is one part of the, you know, difficult problem to solve. The second part, again, when you construct more, I think I saw a statistic about cement, which was for me mind-boggling. And since Sheetal, you mentioned about China being the top contributor, China has used 4 times the amount of cement in 10 years than what US did in one century. So it is mind-boggling. So China has used in 10 years something like 8.7 billion cubic meters of cement, and US used in 115 years 2.4 billion. So cement is needed. I'm not saying they are building a lot, so that is the reason for all the usage of cement. But the fallback of this huge cement need is that one of the ingredients of that is sand, And that part has resulted in illegal, dredging and all the sand mafia. India is aware of it. India, Tamil Nadu, one river has gone extinct because of the dredging in Tamil Nadu. I think I'm forgetting the name of the river. And I read that another area where a lot of this sand mining happens is Mekong Delta. And Mekong Delta is kind of sinking 2 centimeters, every year. It's a grave situation now. Roads have slid down, houses have been lost. There has been huge damage due to that. And when I was reading, I thought about sand. You know, if sand is needed, there is so much sand. Why do you need to go to riverbeds? So I realized that the only sand usable for cement and glass is actually a particular grain size, which you only find in riverbeds. You cannot use the sand dunes kind of sand because it's very fine and it's weathered, so it's very smooth. It doesn't bind, and you cannot use the ocean sand also because that is also weathered and it is not, it's too fine. So there is no other solution than dredging rivers, but the rate is so high that usually the sand replenishes in the riverbed, but there has been no time for doing that. There is constant illegal mining. So, I mean, it's a grave problem, I mean.
Yeah, so Nilesh, closer home, Bangalore has similar issues, right? They've had a lot of construction which has gone on, and you're now seeing the fights that are happening in Bangalore around that too. It's also interesting because it's not just the weather of the beach sand, it's also the saltiness of that sand, and that creates damage when it is used in construction. So there's all kinds of problems around the sand, and that's why this whole dredging issue which is coming up.
In fact, just as we end this section, there's one of the things that I've been kind of talking to a few people about associated with sand is water, actually. So the UN has actually said that the next World War III will actually be fought over water. And there are about 300 conflict zones they have identified where around the world where this could cause conflict can be triggered by lack of water. Closer to what we are all associated with, ChatGPT. So ChatGPT, every time you run a query on ChatGPT or you make an individual search, it consumes 500 ml of water. So every time it is half a liter of water. So just between 2021 and 22, the Microsoft data center where OpenAI runs, they registered some 34% increase. So 1.7 billion liters of water were consumed. And if you kind of go back to the Google's environment report, they have consumed 5.6 billion liters of water. So one can argue that, generative AI is very good. It's important and, it's serving a greater good. But to our earlier point that somewhere, I think construction, data center technologies, all of that has to kind of fall in line with this aspect, which gets neglected because people keep on talking about electricity consumption, but the water side kind of gets ignored. So that was something which
I think we tend to take water for granted. We just assume it's always going to be there. Yeah, that's one of the big challenges, right? In everything that we look at, even when we talked about fashion tech, and we talked about the thousands of liters of water that gets consumed in producing one pair of denims or one pair of jeans or whatever.
Absolutely.
I think we tend to forget because the most essential thing after air, I think, would be water. But we just tend to take water for granted forever. And I think that's a very good point to highlight, Samiran, because water is going to become the challenge in addition to everything else. So maybe with that, we come to the end of the first segment where we've really defined what we think is going to be the problem with the real estate piece and how I think in the next segment we'll kind of cover how some tech, if it is also in the sustainable space and does not consume water the way ChatGPT is likely to have quite a bit of change in the sustainable development space. So we'll come back to you on that in the second segment.
Hi, welcome back. In the previous segment of our Makan episode, we talked about the problem and the extent of the problem. Why we are where we are, right? And the issue is that where do we need solutions? So when you talk of the homelessness part, the solution required is, can you create low-cost housing at a rapid rate? Because, you know, it solves a lot of issues, societal issues like mental health, physical health, drug abuse, alcohol abuse and stuff like that. So one is the aspect about cheap, fast and probably sustainable development. The second is that, you know, what does it entail to create, you know, the future where buildings are much more sustainable, much more energy efficient, and how do we go about that? And the third aspect of tackling this problem is also retrofitting, right? So, as I said in the previous segment, 2/3 of the building will still be around for 2 decades. So, the problem will still be there. So you have to do some amount of redevelopment of the existing stuff. So Sheetal, why don't you kind of lay the ground about, you know, this whole sustainable aspect and what does it really entail when we talk of the sustainable, the second aspect, you know, so creating sustainable buildings.
So, you know, when we talk about that, Nilesh, we tend to look at one aspect of it very often when we're having conversations. But if you think of a building or a construction, then think about it as, can we make it more energy efficient? Because we're talking about how much energy construction is taking in, right? So how do we do energy efficient design features to ensure that we're using renewable energy resources rather than, we're using energy consumption from other places? So how do we do, for example, solar panels, which is a renewable energy resource? So we need to think about energy efficiency. We also need to think about building materials. Like, are there ways that we can use recycled materials to reduce the environmental impact that is there with construction? A big thing, like Samiran said, water is a big thing. Consumption, but in addition to that, how do you make sure that you have both water and waste management? Because waste management is also a large area. We in Bombay, you know how much of this whole landfill nonsense is going on because we are not really looking at construction-based recycling. We are not looking at things like that. You break anything in the house and, you know, it's the truckwala's problem because he comes and collects it, and where he goes and dumps it, nobody really knows or cares. Those are things that we need to start becoming conscious of as consumers. I think we're also, we spoke about carbon footprint. How do you offset your carbon footprint? You know, what can you do to make, to use energy efficient materials? How do you encourage public transportation? So imagine if you have Hiranandani creating what it is creating in Mumbai. Now, if you don't provide for public transportation options and things like that, then you are causing more problems because you're now going to make sure that people use more cars and all of that. So it's all just going to add to multiple levels of carbon footprint, not just the carbon footprint that is going into the construction itself. We can also do a lot of landscaping solutions. Bombay, I know, has a challenge as far as space is concerned, Samiran, but I'm sure that there are ways that we can do green roofs and, you know, vertical farming and things like that, which helps in the whole green landscaping space. So there are so many areas that one can look at when you think about talking about sustainable homes. It's not just about the sand consumption, or it's not just about the water consumption. It's the sum total of about every aspect of the construction.
So, you know, I think the thing that always comes back to bite us is the fact that, you know, the cost of doing all of this versus the benefit and who pays for it. So, I mean, we kind of hear it all the time. You know, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, but the cost will go up to this. So I think somewhere the economies of scale have to kick in such that this becomes viable. And I kind of keep on going back to our episodes on, you know, Aadhaar and all, where they said, you know, that we kind of gave identity for $1 a citizen. So, I mean, and I'm not saying that it's going to be that cheap, but we'll have to figure out some way of doing this such that we can provide these features, for want of a better word, at a cost that is acceptable. Because, you know, I mean, quite honestly, the common man doesn't want to pay for all of this, you know, and say that, you know, I want a clean environment, but I'll pay double the cost. So I think somewhere that thing is a bit of a challenge. So if we kind of shift gears and talk about companies and what they do. And since we kind of did a bit of Microsoft bashing earlier about water consumption. So in fact, in that sense, they have kind of been at the forefront of this whole net zero campaign, because I think Brad Smith, who's their president and chief legal counsel, he's kind of been at the forefront of this. And they've kind of taken it upon themselves to pilot this starting from the Redmond campus. I think there used to be 72 buildings there, and they were, I think, kind of are breaking all of them down and redoing it. And the new campus that will come up will be completely, you know, sustainable to that degree. So, you know, just as an example, Microsoft, I think business grew by 18% in 2022, but emissions fell by 0.5%. So while 0.5 is not significant, but you kind of, you say that at 18% growth, at least there should be 18% emissions, but that actually fell. So, you know, that was a big thing. To your point about waste, I think they've been doing a lot of work on the waste side. On the server hardware side, at least their sustainability report claims that 82% of all of that is from recycled material or is recycled into something else. In fact, they have reduced, I think, plastic, single-use plastic, I think, has come down by 29%. In fact, Nilesh, I think one of the places they took up this campaign as a pilot was in the Dublin office. So I think that whole, you know, paper cups and, you know, single-use plastic and all that to bring it out. So I think they are definitely setting the tone in terms of, you know, they've signed PPA agreements for 13 gigawatts of energy. So, you know, then there is a whole lot of work they're doing on carbon renewable. And I think that's also in the millions of tons, you know, they're actually kind of paying for carbon renewal. And their objective is not carbon neutral. I think they want to be carbon negative. So, which is kind of a very, very big objective. So I guess everybody can't be a Microsoft, but I think there could be learnings, small learnings in there for everyone. You know, maybe there could be things one can pick and choose and say, you know, maybe I can deal with water this way, I can deal with wastes this way, maybe I can do something in the energy space. And at least if all the big tech companies and the larger organizations go this way, and maybe the larger industrial houses, I think we would have taken at least a baby step in the direction of affordable, sustainable, easily available housing, as well as construction, which is environment friendly.
Since before we end the sustainability aspect of our solution statement, I have to add another company. Now, this is on the other side of what you mentioned. So, Alphabet had, I don't know whether the company is still alive, called Sidewalk Labs, company which was into sustainable development. Now, Sidewalk Labs took up a bid for a project to redevelop the Toronto waterfront, you know, in 2017. And they came up with a fantastic, you know, presentations about, you know, tons of things, robo taxis, sidewalks which were heated, you know, a lot of monitoring was involved because, you know, it is Alphabet and Google, but for your benefit, supposedly, quote unquote, and the jazzy presentation and the city gave the project to Alphabet. And in, you know, obviously COVID happened, and that was one of the reasons why they said they scrapped the project in, I think, late 2020 or 2021. That is how they said that it was untenable, you know, COVID delays, this, that. But the fact was, one of the architects from the city, Toronto City Council or something, put it very nicely and very aptly. He said that, you know, these companies talk about what they can do, or rather what they will do for the waterfront, but no one is talking about what should be done. What the city felt was that while you talked of all these things, no one really talked of the sustainable aspect, which Samiran and Sheetal, you mentioned, right? While Microsoft, there was no clear model of how do you make it more green? What is the waste management? It did talk of how brilliant monitoring would be so that, you know, your life will be so simplified, but they never talked about what should be done. And this is like a opposite example to what Microsoft is doing, you know. Before we end on the sustainable practices, I'll just add, you know, both of you have talked about those two things. And since I mentioned about cement, just to, you know, there is we talked of sand and how, it is an important component, but you don't get the right kinds other than riverbed. So there is some work happening whereby you can take rock and blast it to the right degree to create particles which can be a replacement to riverbed sand. So that is a good thing that is happening so that, you know, some relief to the rivers. And another thing to add, which we didn't touch upon, I mean, it has to be done in a controlled manner. Wood, coming back to construction, is actually good because it is, a very sustainable resource. And people are looking at how they can utilize wood, which used to be the core component of construction, and it is no longer anymore, right? So that was another one on sustainable aspect. So that was our bit on the first, part of the solution statement. The second part was, I'll quickly continue, was about homes, you know, how do you create homes fast, cheap, and I mentioned about the Cambridge study on impact of providing home to homeless, and they didn't stop at just the study. They actually created modular mini homes, and the cost of those mini homes was around $50,000. That is actually equivalent to the public spending on one homeless person for a year in UK. So it is kind of self-sustaining. You solve the problem with the money that you anyway end up spending. So that was what Cambridge did about modular mini homes. Closer home in India, there is a organization called Habitat for Humanity International. They have invested about $400,000 in a startup called Trasta. These guys produce 3D printed homes. These are extremely affordable, and they can be customized and put up in, I think, 5 or 6 days. So 3D printed homes is something which even Africa has been toying with. There is a startup called 14 Trees in Malawi and Kenya. These guys build 3D printed home in 12 hours, and the cost is less than $10,000. Yeah. This is a clincher. The process of this fabrication is such that it reduces emissions by as much as 70%. So the sustainable and cheap, extremely fast built up. So they are gaining quite a bit of traction. There was a nice, I saw a video also about this 14 trees and the kind of homes they're building in Malawi and Kenya. Then there is a project which was very interesting. Again, this was in Los Angeles, where shipping containers, the homes are being created, and shipping containers are used like modular units. So you can, if you want floors, you stack them up, and then you have some amount of insulation, windows, other built-up area, and you can put them up very fast. Actually, when I read this, I was wondering why India was not mentioned, because I know for sure that Pune has a kind of a tech park. I'll not call it a park, but an area where you can, I'll say, a workspace, co-working space, which is built out of shipping containers. So in India, I've heard this in Pune, and also in North somewhere, where people are using shipping containers as a very fast way of building up, living areas. So that was some of my thoughts on how to build fast modular kind of homes.
So I also think that one is building them fast, etc., but it's also about how do you ensure that within the homes there is all the facilities that, you know, otherwise very often you say, oh, the house is small, it's affordable, and therefore it's compromised on a whole bunch of levels. So I'm hoping that the kind of affordable housing that happens is happening not just because the, you know, the government is pushing for affordable housing, because every time you hear about this in India that there is a push for affordable housing, but when you speak to the builder community, you kind of get a sense that nobody's really creating affordable housing.
Very, very true, Sheetal. Actually, I should have mentioned. So these 3D printed homes and even the shipping containers, they do have the shipping containers. One have a microwave, a fridge, a TV, and a toilet, and it's a single room. So you can cook or heat something, and you know, you have a toilet. You are absolutely right. The facilities have to be such that someone can live in. The Cambridge one is actually a pretty good house, you know, because it is costing you almost about 40,000. It's not a lot, but it has the amenities. But you're right. I mean, yeah, it has to solve the problem and not create more nuisance of, you know, waste and stuff happening outside of the house, right? So that's true.
So I heard this a recent interview by Nandan Nilekani, and so I, you know, like we kept on hearing about these how they have built digital rails and infrastructure, which is how UPI, Aadhaar, ONDC, and all that. So now actually at the next level, they are actually building out components which essentially will go on to solve climate change issues. So by, you know, even I felt, you know, how the hell is this going to happen? So what they're saying essentially is that there are parts of this piece, which is, you know, like this carbon markets for carbon, there is, you know, waste management, you know, there has to be, basically the whole thinking that they have is that the government, the markets and civil society need to come together. So it has to be a whole ecosystem play. So they are, at least they're using technology to build an ecosystem, which will allow us to deliver this profitability every day. Because like we are saying, you know, the government can push, but, you know, it doesn't make economic sense. You know, if the builders are creating waste, there has to be a market to sell it so that they can make, money out of it. And civil society also has to agree that, okay, this is basic standard. So I was very intrigued by the fact that this whole digital public infrastructure thing is kind of, thanks to G20 and all of that, is kind of flowing into this climate change, sustainability, and maybe construction and all of that is a part of this, that, you know, technology is going to kind of become a part of how we will solve these problems in the future. At least that is the hope.
So on that space of technology solving problems, I think what's happened in the makan sector is technology has solved some problems for us already, right? For example, earlier finding a home, you were stuck on having a broker, working with the brokers in the area, etc. Today, you know, you have the 99 acres and everybody. So there's a whole platformization as far as search and find is concerned. Even if you were renting a house, right, a nobroker.com today is a much easier way to find things. So there's tech which is there in the search space. There is also tech in the way, earlier, if you remember, builders used to do show flats and multiple options, and you could not see a building when it was just a plot of land. But today, sure, with drones and with 3D and virtual and AR, VR, they are able to show you what a house is going to look like in the future, right? Sure. So you are now able to take a slightly more, how should I say, informed decision in that sense. And coming to Nilesh's favorite blockchain, right? It has increased transparency in transactions, right? Because now land and its ownership is established thanks to blockchain and things like that. So verifiable credentials coming into that space. So I think what has happened is where it comes to the consumer experience of buying a house, I think tech has already started making a huge difference. What we have not seen on a large scale, and it's happening, but I think an average consumer doesn't see it, is how technology is being used in construction. So LEED certified buildings, you know, Nilesh was talking about the whole, the way windows will be glazed, etc., for insulation purposes and so on. So I think what is required is the awareness of how technology is playing a role in building sustainable constructions. And I think that's where the gap is. I think that's where we need to start educating the public, and people need to start asking these questions to say, is this a sustainable building, not a sustainable building? And what we are hearing from consumers, at least the younger generation, is that they're asking these questions. I think the older generation, which is our generation, is still not as aware, but the younger ones...
It is like a more of friends and family kind of approach.
Correct. Yeah. But whereas the younger one is asking all the right questions. So I think there is hope for us and for the planet at large that when young people ask questions and, you know, your ratings drop and your saleability drops if you're not really sustainable, then it'll force, the market forces will force the suppliers to kind of go more sustainable. I don't know what you think about that and what's happening in Dublin there, Nilesh, on this front, but I'm seeing that slight shift coming into India for sure.
So, you know, you're so right. I mean, in the end, economics will play a very big role in bringing about the change. And in Dublin, Ireland as such, they have a single rating system for buildings, right? It is called BER rating, B-E-R. And actually, your house value goes down as you get a worse BER rating. So A is high and then it's three levels in A and three levels in B, C, D. So if you are, you know, when you search for a house, A and B BER rated are like green. After that, it is already orange and red. So value of your house saleability goes down. It's very, very, very clear. So that part definitely will help in building sustainable stuff. And coming to the, you know, the my point, which is the third one, retrofitting. So before selling your house, you might want to, you know, renovate it, get the new energy certificate, so that value of your it will kind of pay for the retrofitting, honestly. So that part I found it very interesting, that your value will go up and the differential will actually be something you will spend on the house and get it back. So worth doing it is worthwhile, right? So
that might be a bit of a challenge in the Indian context, Nilesh, given that, you know, all of us live in societies and we live in large apartment buildings versus individual homes, where there's always a conflict over there. But I'm sure we will have to find solutions for that too.
Correct. Very true. I think I just wanted to say that you're right. I mean, India, the whole apartment complex stuff is a bit more difficult. But you did mention about what can be done at an individual apartment level, you know, to reduce the heating, make the ventilation better, you know, have more efficient air conditioning. These are the things which go into, you know, energy consumption while operating a building. And 70% of emissions actually come from building operations. You know, only 30% are related to construction. So I think some amount of retrofitting can be done at a apartment level. And on the water thing, you know, I know for sure in when I was in Gurgaon, many apartment buildings started doing rainwater harvesting, which was fantastic because, yeah, unlike Maharashtra, I mean, obviously there is a shortage. It is semi-arid kind of a area. So yeah.
Yeah, I think we kind of got a little involved in this whole housing thing. Suffice to say that there is a lot of work going on. It's not an easy problem to solve. At least I just kind of saw news today that even with the Prime Minister's that Awas Yojana, I think they put about $7.2 billion into housing for, you know, low interest credit for people, about 50 lakh loan. So, you know, they're trying to help in their own way. I saw a very, very nice interview with Nitin Gadkari, who talked about highways and, you know, the amount of recycled material that is going into highway constructions, which is plastics and all other waste, which is very heartening to note. And I also saw that, you know, when the government is being progressive, they actually give 10 to 20% more for land acquisition. They give 10% advance if you're buying equipment and all. So there's tons of stuff that's going on. So I think in the times to come, maybe not 2030, but at least by 2040, we will see this tide turning somewhat, that affordable housing, sustainable housing, more people getting housing And, you know, hopefully all of this will turn out and we don't have to then go to Mars and settle. So,
yeah, which is our prediction for 2050. So, yeah, if you've missed our episode on predictions for 2050, you need to go back and listen to that. Because Samiran, of course, believes that all of us should migrate to Mars such that Earth can cleanse itself. And then we can come back and live here more happily. If we hopefully do everything right now, maybe we won't have to migrate to Mars. On that happy note, thank you for listening to another episode of Three Techies Banter. We hope you had fun. If you did, please subscribe. We are on various podcast platforms. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave behind a review. It helps our podcast grow. And do remember that we've launched a whole series of shorts now, which come to you at a higher frequency than our longer episodes. They're fun. They give you their technology and beyond. So we talk about everything from peanut butter sandwiches to Donald Duck's sister. And that could be a quiz question. If you know her name, please send it to us. And you could win a prize. And there's a lot more fun things that we're doing with our shorts. So look forward to hearing from all of you and hope that you continue listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Techies Banter. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.